Okay, I don't mean any disrespect by that, Dick, wherever you are. And I know you're someplace really good. Really, really good. I am simply... That was a good sign-off, and since you're not around anymore, I thought maybe... Do you mind if I... Until then, Phil Hendry, so long. That wouldn't work for me anyway, but... I don't know why, but I got into a whole... Because, you know, this morning, and I promise you that we're going to use camera 3 from this point forward tomorrow, and it's going to be used for television viewing. And I swear to Christ, I mean that. because you got to know what I'm looking at, right? But I looked up Joyce Meyer, because we've had the Word Network on, which is what she's on, and we've also had Mother Angelica's channel, which is Eternal Word Television Network, and she's always a treat, I guess. You got to have the sound turned up for Mother Angelica, because she just sits there in her nun habit. It's just the nun habit is an iconic thing for me, but do bread come with this? The law of faith demands that whatever God will deliver into your hands must first be declared with your mouth. Do bread come with this? What the fuck kind of language is that? That's exactly what I just saw here on the Word Network. Do bread come with this? Let's get some goddamn grammar going, okay? I don't give a shit if you think it's anti-something or other. This is a very non-partisan issue and one which I feel very strongly about. What was I saying? So, and Hezekiah received the letter of the hand of the messengers and read it. And Hezekiah went up into the house of the Lord and spread it before the Lord. Oh, really? Jesus Christ. You talk about filth file. Now, I'm just kidding around. Come on. We got a couple more laughs going here, man, and a little less bullshit. I'm thinking of starting a Pastor William Rennick podcast where he uses a lot of bad language, but probably, I don't know. I got a million ideas, man. We are, this Dr. Elcott thing may or may not, you know, it may or may not sustain. We have a new Twitter account for Vernon Dozier. He's going to be on the show this morning. And we live tweeted the World Cup game with Vernon. And it's not the most difficult thing in the world to live tweet. What's difficult is holding off on tweeting every goddamn feeling. I think this is where people make their mistake with live tweeting and really with tweeting. There are people who tweet every fucking thing they feel. And in an effort to gain a lot of followers, they follow back. I understand that. And then they tweet every fucking thing they feel. And I think that that's valuable if you want to, like I'm giving you the technique on getting followers on Twitter. Who gives a shit? You know, it's not changing anybody's fucking life that profoundly. I can think of, as I mentioned, there's a couple people that I know of, and there's probably more, who have, their lives have changed in a big way because of Twitter. But they're all, I think they're all entertainers. I don't know of anybody else. Politicians? Has a politician made it? I don't think so. Because of a Twitter account? Maybe. Kelly Oxford, Rob Delaney. These are all Twitter people, Twitter centric. You know the. Okay, fuck all that bullshit. Now, number two, our one man show, July the 30th. Get your tickets at the station at the Rock Island Line. Get your tickets for that motherfucker, because I have now decided I will be down to the optimum 210 pounds again by that date. I'll roll it out live. You know what the fuck. I'm not just going to say I'm 210. I'm going to show your ass how fucking devastatingly, sexual, you see. And then I'm going to also, I'll do the full 90-minute show. We're going to say it's 50 minutes, it's that. We went 90 minutes the last fucking time. I did 90 minutes. It was standing on my head. Now, I saw the tape of the performance, and I liked it, but Christ almighty, I thought I was way out of shape physically. I looked like shit. That shirt was fucked up. And we had bought like two or three shirts for that fucking show and decided to go with that, just one that I had. It didn't work, you know. Nonetheless... It's cool. That's why we do these things. You tweak and you know, first thing we tweak is we get rid of the guy that's on stage and put someone else there. Hey. The next thing we tweak is change all the jokes. Next thing we tweak, let's give that guy all the money. Burger. Berg. By the way, I was just finishing up reading Abe Lincoln, or excuse me, reading our good close personal friend. I'm not finishing up yet, but I am almost done with the William Sherman memoir. And it's very, very touching. He writes that he saw Mr. Lincoln at City Point as the war is coming to an end. This was like 3 weeks before Lincoln was killed, maybe 2 weeks. He meets with Lincoln and he meets with Grant. They're at City Point. This is up near Richmond. They have Lee surrounded. He's cut off from Johnston's army. The end has arrived for the South. He's got Sheridan, Stoneman, and several other cavalries ripping the fucking railroads to shit. I mean, all the railroads leading into Richmond just got ripped to shit. All the railroads going down south ripped to shit. This was primary in all of the orders that Sherman was delivering to his subordinates. Make sure you, they called in those days the roads. They didn't call them railroads. They said, I want that Danville Road ripped up. I want that road to Goldsboro ripped to shit. And they didn't say ripped to shit. They said they want it destroyed. But I'm sure in private conversation, he said, and Grant the same. And also at this point in the memoirs, General Sherman has a lot of communication between himself and Grant. He reprints a lot of it. There's also a piece of correspondence that he reprints from Admiral Dahlgren, who was with the U.S. Navy, what they call the Atlantic Fleet. And he was at the Southern Atlantic Fleet, and he writes, and this piece of communication was obviously chronologically out of order, sort of in the memoirs of General Sherman, but he had to put it in there for some other vital information, but it just happened to slip in the line, the news of the murder of the president has just reached us. Now, chronologically, the memoirs are at this point, 3 weeks, about three, two and a half, 3 weeks before the surrender, ultimately. And they're feeling it, and they know it, and it's about to happen. And he meets with President Lincoln and General Grant at City Point. The General Grant and his staff have a series of huts along some river, I forget the name of it. Down at the wharf is a riverboat in which the President and Mrs. Lincoln are staying. And Sherman and Grant are asked by Julia Grant, the wife of General Grant, did you call upon Mrs. Lincoln as well? Did you guys go down there just to see the president, because they'd been down the day before? Or did you also ask after Mrs. Lincoln? And they said, no, we did not. And she said, essentially, you two guys are a couple of stumbling, muttering pricks. Get back down there. And they were, yes, ma'am, yes, dear. So the next day, they go back down. They call on Mr. Lincoln again. I think they brought Admiral Porter with him at that time, who was also a member of the Atlantic Fleet. I guess that was the only goddamn fleet we had, pardon my language. Well, we had California, but we have the Atlantic Fleet. What about your Pacific Fleet? Well, it's a sailboat. It's just, we don't have it, but we just got California 3 weeks ago. So they go to see Lincoln, and Lincoln is very concerned about one thing. He says, General Sherman, why are you here? You should be with your troops at Goldsboro in North Carolina. He says, don't worry about it. I have General Schofield. He is absolutely top of the line. Great. He can handle everything. Okay, great. He says, are you ready? And Sherman says, Mr. President, are you ready for the peace? Are you ready? He says, yes, we are. We're all set. We're going to do this, that, something else. And they continue to discuss this and that. And he writes as he leaves, that's the last time I saw the president. And he said, I have never met a man in my life before or since who combined the qualities of leadership and kindness as well as this man did. That was Sherman's epitaph for Lincoln. It's a beautiful one. It's a beautiful one. I never met a man in my life who had such qualities of kindness as well as leadership as this man. We also know that, now I'm getting really heavy, I know, I'm getting into my, you know, Professor Phil thing here, but Tolstoy, no less a personage, no less a personality, a writer, an observer of human nature than Tolstoy, said that Lincoln was Christ-like. He said it, I didn't. He said Lincoln was Christ, not because he was God, but because he had the Christ-like qualities of sacrifice, you know, that Lincoln in a lot of ways was, maybe everybody was all fucking, you know, excuse me for doing the jerk off. That's bad. I was doing the jerk, for those of you just listening and not seeing this, I was doing with my left hand the jerk off thing. But what I'm saying is that back then, immediately following the assassination of the president, when I say immediately, within 50 years, because Tolstoy was writing this within 50 years of Lincoln's assassination, he was, and many people did compare him to Christ in the sacrificial sense that he, you know, he was nailed to the cross for the sins of the country. And he died for the sins of the country and thus redeemed the nation in its move forward. I mean, it's hard not to see it that way. By the same token, maybe you think, well, maybe that's the lesson, you know, of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ or the sacrifice of any human being, any real human being that's working on behalf of something bigger than himself, is essentially you sacrifice yourself for the whole, which is the human family, you know. It all sounds very neat, and anybody that does that, of course, is immediately looked upon as a schmuck, and what do you get out of it, man? I mean, what's the payoff, huh? Come on. Huh? You're going to get nailed to the cross? Well, I don't know. I'm doing it for the sins of man. What the fuck? Doing it for the sins of man? What the fuck is that? What's the payoff? Where's the money? Huh? Where are you hiding the money, Jesus? Listen, just get away from me. They're about to nail me to the cross. Yeah, I'll get away. Don't worry about it. Jesus Christ, I don't want to do that. I see that my name has already become sort of a favorite curse word. It's not a curse, no. It's like I'm praying to you, although I don't know why, but... So you are going to let them do that? Yes. And you're not getting paid? No, I'm not getting paid. Gee, fuck that. Totally anti-human nature, right? Because human nature is, I got to survive. And why? That's why the United States became such, and has become such a prominent, powerful, amazingly transcendent nation, because it's all about that instinct, you know, me, I, the individual. You can translate that back into me, I want mine, me, and then we go to, you know, what we talk about when we discuss crime, you know, the idea of the psychopath and the sociopath being all about themselves and all about their survival and all about what they can gain and all about who they can manipulate. And so this society that emphasizes all of that to some extent, in a more positive way, but nonetheless, is a perfect society for the flourishing of an individual like that. And then we were talking about Asian societies, which are the opposite, which emphasized the greater, the community, the village, the town, the clan, the tribe, the nation, that you had an automatic responsibility to all of those around you. And, you know, as we've often said, you know, it's literally written into their laws in China that you have to take care of certain people. And that's why the incidence of sociopathic or psychopathic kinds of behaviors that they can track, which is generally the records of the criminal, you know, record, is much lower than it is in Western society. Not that they don't have psychopaths, I'm not saying that, but a psychopath has less room to move. And here is a better statement on that. The psychopath is trained from an early age to resist those instincts. Because we know, like, teenage kids that are psychopathic are worked with by psychologists and behaviorists to know that, okay, every time you fuck up, there's a penalty. Every time you fuck up, there's a penalty. Now, what they do with the kids, which I don't think is probably smart, is about every time you do something well, every time you do something right, there's a reward, which is not the way life is. That's not the way. Life is not consistent. You can fuck up and do something bad, and there is no penalty. You can do something great, and there is no reward. But for the purposes of the safety of society, you have to take an individual like that and show them, well, at least there's a bad thing that happens when you fuck around, man. See? So the whole fucking thing boils down to this. If you can raise a psychopath up in a society that already sends the message that your needs and your wants are going to go to the back of the fucking burner while we take care of the family, we take care of the village, we take care of the community, we take care of the old people, we take care of the young people, and then we'll get around to you, jackass, okay? Which, these days, in this country especially, sounds rather refreshing, if you want to get right down to it. It doesn't sound refreshing to someone who is just emerging into life, like, and they're saying, wow, man, this is fantastic, especially the psychopathic personality, but anybody who is just new to life and is all out for, you know, this thing. Like me, when I was a kid, I was perfect. I was a perfect kid. No, I'm kidding. But when I was a kid, I was extremely reticent, very shy, and always wanting to do the right thing. I wanted to be accepted. I didn't want to be weird. You know, I wasn't one of those kids that my weird instincts came out of me despite my best efforts at trying to be cool and trying to be, attractive and also patted on the head by the adults. And yet out blurted these weird things, weird characters, strange observations, which totally entertained anybody around me who got it, and completely nonplussed. That's a great word that I don't really know the meaning of, but I think I do. But completely nonplussed the individuals who, a minute ago, you were really cool and you were really bitching and you were really a good boy, and now you're like, what is that, you know? And that really hurt me. Oh, shit, you know, that stuff came out of me again. That weird Phil came out, you know? And so I did everything I could to continue to press it down. Even through the first years of my career, I just wanted to be a good radio personality, but not, I mean, I wanted to be like, I don't know, one of those early old school cats, like, you know, like Lohman and Barkley or something, who I still to this day I think are genius performers, but, they were good, they were successful. But nothing that I was thinking about could possibly be successful. And then a lot of you guys have heard this story, but it bears repeating for those of you that haven't, which may be a whole lot of people. I took an acting class from Daryl Hickman, who said, and I, of all the things he said, I remember this one the most. He said, all you can do is speak your truth. If the audience accepts it, great. If the audience doesn't accept it, at least you spoke your truth. And that resonated with me, because I really needed by that point in my life to start speaking my truth. You know, this stuffing the Phil Hendry instincts, the Phil Hendry person, was not working for me. And it was not pushing my life forward. It was fucking everything up, you know. So that's when I cast caution to the wind and decided to commit 1,000% to my craft as an artist, which was humor, it was radio, and it was more than anything else, not worrying about what anybody thought about it. Sounds counterintuitive, you know, as they say. It sounds like, how do you please an audience if you don't give a shit what the audience thinks? That's exactly how you please an audience, by number one, not giving a shit what they think. It doesn't mean you purposefully try to turn the audience off. You're not saying that. It doesn't mean you get up in the morning, how can I piss the audience off? That is the wrong way to think. The way to think is, how can I have some fun today? What will be fun for me to do today? Now, believe me, you know, successful enterprises, businesses, whatever, do not operate on the principle that the individual coming into the enterprise each day doing exactly what he feels like doing is a successful way of running a business. No, it isn't. However, in the context of that, if you pick the right job and you have the right company that you're working for, you can, because it will conform to what it is they want. If you're in the wrong position and you're with the wrong company, or maybe you're the wrong person, you can't, because a lot of times when you want to do what you want to do, you don't have very healthy instincts. Your instincts are off. And you probably know that, because you can see the people around you are not happy. When you're doing what you want to do and you're really fucking happy doing it, other people are happy too, man. It doesn't work any other way. Other people are going, wow, that's really fucking cool what you're doing. Yeah, it's just, you know how it works. But if you're just bumbling and pushing your fucking way through a day, and everybody around you is getting, like, completely fucking fractured by this shit, all you're doing is just getting off on your own, you know, your own sort of personal stampede through the day, regardless, and that's total narcissism, and it don't work, Jack. The way you do it, if you find yourself at odds with the powers that be, and you're doing your thing, and you know that this is the right thing for you to do, is you very gracefully and you very respectfully part company. You don't do it with anger. You don't throw things. You try to do it. I mean, I haven't always been successful at that, but I mean, that's the way you should do it. You just say, you know, I'm sorry that it didn't work out. Sometimes they do it for you. You know, that's called being fired. And you go on down the road, man. You continue to refine what you're doing. And you will find, not maybe, you will find the environment that works. You eventually will find the environment. I just talked to a guy on Facebook. He's a broadcaster, young guy in San Francisco, who's going to be on his way to Denver to produce some radio. He's very unhappy. He's a journalist by training and by trade and to produce. And he loves San Francisco. And I said, look, I'm telling you, what goes around comes around. You keep after what you want, you will come back to you. But you got to just keep pushing, keep pressing. Find joy in every day, man. You know, today I'm happier than I've been in my work, maybe ever. That's pretty crazy to say. Consider that, man. I'm 62 years old. You know, some people, it takes that long. You know, like Lieutenant Escobar said to Jake Gittes in Chinatown, well, sometimes it takes a man to find himself. Sometimes it takes a man a while to find himself. Gittes. Hey, you know something, Gittes? Mr. Gittes? Gittes. You know, so sometimes it does. All right, today we're going to have, speaking of taking a man a while to find himself, Vernon Dozier will be with us. He'll be talking about the World Cup and other bullshit. You know what I'd like to do today, to be honest with you, is I want to get on, I want to get Rudy back on here, because we have often talked of having the Roodster on and in the last few days and haven't done it yet. So why don't we just do that? I mean, that's the shit that I want to do, right? Where's the notepad? There is. I believe in a thing called love, don't you? Lloyd, I would love to hear him sing that song.
Phil, are you going to warm up your Margaret voice?
Yes, I'm tired of being brought on, Phil.
Well, I'm talking like this. And Margaret, how are you?
I'm fine, but I'm tired of being brought on with the cracked, scratchy, with my crack up in the air. All right, there, I said it.
God, you said your cracks in the air.
What, do you got your legs up in the air?
Which one do I kill first? That comment is my legs up in the air.
All right. I believe in a thing called lust. Take. Baby girl found safe after she went missing with stolen car. I don't like that. Some baby girl stole a car. You loving that? Jesus Christ. A baby girl, an infant, got behind the wheel of a car. No, I'm kidding. Jesus. They found a baby. But that's the kind of thing where you have to be careful. You got to be careful how you're writing the headline, as they say. I'm very concerned here, man. I want to get my fucking the new board in here, man. What's going on? Okay. All right, kid. kids. We almost ready to go. See what else. Make sure you get your tickets for the show. Don't miss it, man. Don't miss it. This is going to be off the fucking hook, this motherfucker. Because I'm going to refine this thing down to even more. I'm going to block this thing out way better. I don't know how much dialogue I'm going to have going on in this thing, too, in terms of talking back and forth to characters. I think that maybe a character should just be out there doing their thing. Because I haven't talked to anybody about the show, really, since the show started. And when the show was over, there was a lot of euphoria. I mean, I went upstairs and I went into the little green room. And there were a lot of people coming and saying, oh, you knocked it out of the fucking park. It was fantastic. And, you know, at that point, the one guy that I will give credit to was Jimmy Pardo, who came in and said, you know what, your mic, they got to tweak the audio, which I really appreciate. You know, I do. And then he said to me later, man, I didn't mean to come with a bummer right after the show. It was such a great show. I said, no, I'm very, very happy that you did, man. I got to know this stuff. Because that's always a tough one, man, especially with what I do. The fucking audio, you know, is got to be specific. And the guys at this is not any comment on the improv, because they're on it, and I appreciate them immensely. But there are some places, even radio stations, that don't get the idea, don't know the first fucking thing about audio in a public place, in miking something. When I went to the Luxor in Vegas and did my radio show there, there should have been some engineer somewhere in that entire goddamn company of Clear Channel that knew doing a radio show in a big fucking cement room was going to be, trying to listen to phone calls, was going to be a fucking nightmare. Do you think? It's a big company. They tell me that they do radio. I don't know. I could be wrong. There was not one motherfucker there, not one swinging dick there, knew a goddamn thing. Now, I know that there's people from that company perhaps would be listening to me right now. Oh, it's sour grapes, Henry. No, I'm asking a very key question. You know, it's not sour grapes. I mean, anybody that was there could tell you. However, you know, it's cool. I'm not going to get my fucking underwear in a snap. All right, we're going to get ready here to jack off. I'm just kidding. One of the things I do need to do. Touching me. I don't want to get my underwear wadded up and shoved up the crack, if we just say it the way we want to say it. I don't need no doctor.
Goddamn,
this goddamn fucking shadow.
All the fucking bad bitches. I don't want no mediocre. No.
Swift. All right, ready? Let's get our shit together here. Gonna get our tune in, our listen live folks, rock and roll here, and then we'll be ready to go. I was gonna get in Vernon Dozier, who will be at the Belmar Academy Carnival. They're doing some fundraising. And hello, welcome, good morning to our tune in and to our listen live listeners. Those of you listening on our website, philhenryshow.com. Those of you listening to TuneIn, by the way, TuneIn airs our show whenever and however. In other words, TuneIn, I believe, was airing our 12-hour BSP-a-thon, but we'll get into that later on.